Hey there, everybody. This is John Henry from johnhenry.us. Welcome aboard to the live stream for Singles Awareness Day 2020, February 14th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host, and we are here and now. We are going to have some conversations today. The big thing I want to focus on today is propaganda and language. And how information, mass communication, and words can be used to manipulate and to influence us in ways that we perhaps would prefer they didn't. What actually prompted this was a message that I saw this morning on the Facebook page of a group called the Coffee Party USA, which was a political group that was founded a few years ago, supposedly dedicated to, you know, civility and moderation and trying to find, you know, common ground between left and right in this country and what have you. And so I have to be a subscriber. Some personal friends of mine are members of the board there. And I caught this message today where they're talking about doublethink. Right. And 1984 and Orwellian concepts like that, which is fine. Right. And I'm reading this post and I'm about halfway through it and I see this hashtag fairness doctrine. Now, this was kind of surprising to me just on a real basic level, because I've written extensively in the past about why the fairness doctrine simply is not a thing that will work or can work in the world of modern media. And in fact, it really became mostly useless with the rise of television, cable television news stations back beginning with CNN in 1980. And there's a lot of reasons for that that I'm going to get into in a minute. But the key thing that I really wanted to talk about first was just the incredible irony involved here in using 1984 in a conversation about doublethink, advocate for state-controlled media. That is doublethink. Literally, you're talking about establishing a Ministry of Truth-style government oversight and control of the media by the government, exactly as was depicted in 1984. And then you're using that to... I mean, it's such a circle. It confuses me. I don't understand how people do that. And it really took me aback because I know, you know, most of the people that I know at Coffee Party are very well informed and very intelligent. They know what these things are. They're aware of these concepts. And so it really knocked me out. I'm peeking up right now and seeing that I have one viewer, and I'm assuming that's me because I don't see any kind of chats or anything coming on. But I'm going to go ahead here and duck over, even though it's probably bad form. I'm going to duck over to Facebook and let people know I am up and share the URL here real quick. We'll get that taken care of real quick. And as soon as that posts, then I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste that. Bang. And we're going to run over to the other page that I loved to wake up in the morning when Barack Obama was president, and we are going to create a post for that. And bang, there we go. So hopefully some folks will join us soon, but even if they don't, that's fine, because this is just information that I want to get out there. It doesn't have to be live. It's just always more fun for me when I have people watching and interacting. Yeah, I want to just deconstruct that idea first, and how incredibly surprised I was at the idea that somebody is invoking Orwell, invoking 1984, and you know, trying to be informative about the concept of doublethink, which is the idea of holding two conflicting ideas in your head at the same time and accepting them both as true, sort of the inverse of cognitive dissonance. And then in the very same breath, advocating for fairness doctrine, which is a government mechanism to control the political content of broadcast media. On the public airwaves, it was okay, and we'll talk about that in a second, but it just boggles my mind and really is scary to me and a little terrifying that people literally in the midst of rallying against government control and you know, Orwellian dystopian sort of manipulation fall back directly to the idea of having the government control things. I don't get it, and I didn't get it. So let's talk about this fairness doctrine thing for a minute, okay? Or for an hour or so. I'm planning on being here for an hour, if I can think of enough to say. The fairness doctrine, first and foremost, you need to understand it was never a law, right? It was an FCC policy. It was put in place. I don't have my notes and everything together on it from the classes that I took on history communication, but it was in the 50s, I believe, it was established. And the general idea was that when you are using the public airwaves, broadcast television, broadcast radio, newspapers, then you need to present things in a balanced fashion rather than simply advocating for one position or the other, or for instance having you know, it's very similar to the concept of equal time laws, which back in the day, if you know, if your local television station gave your gubernatorial candidate 5 minutes to talk to their audience on the news, they had to give 5 minutes to all the other candidates as well. And so over time this has gone away, and there's a reason that it has gone away, and that reason is really simple. The FCC and the federal government do not have content control over private communication, communication over private networks, over private property. Okay, which cable television is private property. Satellite television and radio is private property. These are not public things. These are not things that people are going to accidentally run into or what have you, or be exposed to. And it's also not a matter of, you know, the public ownership and a public resource being used for partisan speech at, you know, theoretically public expense, but with no necessary public benefit. And so that was kind of the operating doctrine throughout the years of broadcast news and broadcast television. The problem is the FCC, again, has no content regulatory authority over private networks. This is why you can see adult content on home box office. This is why, you know, even your basic cable stations, like, say, the USA Network, they, you know, have this sort of gentleman's agreement to avoid certain words and certain things. But there's actually no legal requirement for them to do that. Right, they are not bound by law to keep it clean at any particular time of the day or in any particular way. What they do is they make a choice as to what kind of content that they want to produce and what kind of content that they want to put out into the world, and it's entirely their choice to make. Right, and. There's some fuzziness here that can get a little bit difficult to grasp. When I say that the FCC has no, control, content control authority over a cable television station, that doesn't mean that a cable television station can just broadcast, you know, a snuff movie or child pornography or something like that, because those things are already illegal, okay? The broadcasting of them would not be the problem. The possession of them is already a crime. And so broadcasting it is just, you know, to prosecute or to have a law against broadcasting something that's illegal to own in the first place would be rather gilding the lily. Okay. And so what happened in the early 80s is you saw, beginning with the Iraq crisis, of course, when CNN went on the air, you saw the rise of these privately owned cable only news stations like CNN and later MSNBC and Fox News and all of them, who come out and they've got their opinions, they've got their biases and so forth. And all day long, for years and years and years, constantly, you hear people talking about, oh, we've got to return to the fairness doctrine, or, you know, the FCC should revoke the Fox News charter. Fox News doesn't have a charter with the FCC. They don't need one. They're not a network. They're not a broadcast station. They're not using public airwaves. And so they're not governed by any of those mechanisms, including the Fairness Doctrine. So if Fairness Doctrine was still in place today and still being applied today, and they stopped really applying it in 1987, but it wasn't technically repealed until the Obama administration, right? It was President Obama who finally killed it. But it hadn't been in use for, 25 years at that point anyway. But what would happen if we try to implement that right now in the current situation without changing the FCC's authority? What it would do would it would choke your local news broadcasts, and it would choke the news broadcasts for the big three networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, who broadcast over the airwaves. Okay, at one time Fox was pushing out a local news show to its affiliate stations, and I'm not sure if they do that anymore. So I don't know for sure if Fox Network is included in that or not, but certainly Fox News, the channel, is not, because they don't broadcast over the air. They only broadcast on cable and satellite, which is private property. Okay, so functionally, as it stood, Fairness Doctrine could not be applied to Fox News or to MSNBC or to CNN because they're private networks. They're not public airwaves. Well, how do you fix that? Well, you give the FCC the authority. Okay, now it gets scary, right? Because now what you're saying is you're getting ready to hand the keys to your news media over to the federal government, right? You're saying, I'm letting the government dictate and say and approve and authorize what can and cannot be broadcast in news media across the board. And that, boys and girls, is a Pandora's box you do not want to open, because guess what? As soon as you give the FCC that authority, everything goes away. Right now, they can tell HBO, no, you can't show adult films. They can tell you, no, you can't have phone sex with your girlfriend, because we have the authority to say there's no obscenity on this network. Right? You're literally talking about implementing an Orwellian state control of media just because you don't like the political content of a cable news station. That is a solution that is far, far worse than the problem could ever possibly be. And please, for the love of Pete, don't make the mistake of thinking, oh, well, I like this administration, so I'm fine with that. Yeah, well, guess what? You might not like the next administration. Right? That's the way this country works. And we saw some of that under Obama. I'm not trying to slam Obama here. I'm not even trying to get into that argument. But, he did some things that if Donald Trump had done them, the left wing in this country, my band of the ideological spectrum, would have been up at arms. Right. But he was able to kind of get away with it because he was popular and he had, that segment of the audience or the population on his side. And so he was actually able to do some things that a president like Donald Trump or George W. Bush couldn't get away with because the populace, would push back against it. And that's the kind of mechanic that you have to keep in mind when you start talking about handing government power. You got to remember, you're not always going to have a government you like or agree with. And what are they going to do with that power? And this is why, bottom line, fundamentally, you do not want to give the federal government any kind of final authority or final control over the content that is broadcast on private networks. And that is what would be necessary to create an enforceable Fairness Doctrine. Right? Without granting the government that power, you don't have a way to say, no, you can't say this, or yes, you must say this. No, you can't do this. Yes, you must do this. Right? You have to give the government the authority to say that. And when you do that, you open up this huge, huge can of worms that I really don't think it's in anybody's best interest to even consider. If you want to see Home Box Office go away, or the Playboy Channel, or Pornhub, right, or any of your adult websites, because guess what? Those are also private communications networks. YouTube is a private communication network. Right? So now we're going to say, because we disagree with the ideology of one news channel, we're going to throw the whole thing in the garbage and let the federal government, the United States government, tell us what we are and aren't allowed to say on YouTube, or even on, you know, if I was streaming from my own website using my own software, I would still be subject to that authority. Absolutely not. That is horrible. That is literally Orwellian dystopian totalitarianism. And so one of the key points that I really want to drive home on that specific topic, folks, this goes into, there's another thing that comes up is term limits for legislators and excuse me, some states have even passed this, right? Again, this is not acceptable. This is not the way to manage these problems. What we are doing in reality, and it's probably going to hurt some feelings for me to say it out loud, and I'm sorry for that, but what we're doing in reality is we're saying, look, I don't want to put the effort in. I don't have the time, I don't have the energy, I don't have the resources to actually become media literate. And so I want the government to do my work for me. And instead of me being presented with material that I have to sort through and think about, I'm just going to let the government say you can't do that on television. That is a horrible, horrible idea. I mean, that is just begging for again totalitarianism, right? And if anything, over the last, you know, 3 years, we should have learned you don't want to give the government too much power, because you might get a Donald Trump in office. And what would Donald Trump do if the FCC had the power to tell private cable networks, private cable stations, what they were and weren't allowed to say? Is that a world you want to live in? Because I sure don't. And consequently, I also don't want to live in a world where, you know, a Bernie Sanders or Barack Obama has that power either. Okay. Not because I don't like them, but because I don't like that power. I don't think that power should exist in a free society. It can't. By definition, if your state controls all of the media you consume, you don't live in a free society. And so, you know, again, and the term limits comparison is really key here, I think, because, again, we're getting into this bad habit of saying, well, you know what, I don't have time to deal with this. Let's just make a law. I'm sorry, but I really feel like fundamentally this is one of the biggest problems we have in our culture. And it's always really hard to talk about because it's never popular, right? Nobody wants to be told, hey, look, you got to get off your ass and do the hard work. And you're kind of being lazy about this, right? This makes people feel they get all up in their egos and they don't want to deal with the reality. And now you're a jerk and we're going to call each other names. And I must be a fascist or a communist or some kind of ist or whatever. I'm sorry that it may provoke bad feelings. But the reality is, if you want clear messaging and you want to understand what the truth is behind the media you're consuming, you got to get off your ass. And you got to get media literate, and you got to get politically literate. You have to understand things like what Robert Cialdini, who's a renowned writer on these topics and has written textbooks on them, he calls it compliance gaining tactics. Edward Bernays, the father of modern advertising, who probably should have been hung, but... Again, it's manipulation, and all of this mass communication, mass media is used to manipulate, okay? It's used to convince. It's used to gain your compliance with the way whoever is creating the message wants you to think. And I'm doing it right now, by the way, okay? I mean, let's not play games here. Every time we communicate to the world, we are engaged, whether willfully or not, whether with bad intent or good intent, we are engaged in compliance gaining. We are engaged in manipulation, in trying to convince people of our position and its merits. Right. And so you want to be a little careful about the idea of just assuming that all advertising is bad or all compliance gaining tactic is bad. it's a neutral thing, right? It's a tool that can be used for many, many things, some good and some bad, just like a crescent wrench, right? I can use a crescent wrench to build a house for the homeless, or I can use it to sock a little kid in the face, right? That doesn't make the tool good or bad. That makes me good or bad. And so it's really important to apply our best critical thinking to these topics and make sure that we understand deeply the difference, so that we're not just getting angry at, oh, it's that's just manipulation. Well, yeah, and so is Friends, and so is, you know, your favorite kids movie, and so is your favorite Star Trek or Star Wars movie or superhero movie or whatever. Any message you receive has the purpose of convincing you of something. Okay, and any message you send has the purpose of convincing somebody of something. What happens, and where we run into the trouble, is when you get people like Donald Trump and organizations like Fox News, or an even better example would be Project Veritas, which is James O'Keefe's little nonsense organization. You may remember James O'Keefe was the guy who went in and shot videotape and deceptively edited videotape that eventually ended Acorn. And eventually caused the end of federal support for Planned Parenthood through a similar tactic, where they went into these Planned Parenthood office and apparently tried to bait somebody into a conversation about like buying and selling children or something like that, and then went home and edited the tape and chopped it all up to make it look like they had said something that they hadn't. And then that was used to, you know, stoke the fires of outrage and get all the anti-abortion folks on the right wing screaming and hollering. And eventually the idiots in Congress went ahead and passed and said, okay, well, we're not going to give any more federal money to Planned Parenthood. And I'm not going to get into all the statistics and all the reasons why that's horseshit, but that's what happened. And so that's an example of using compliance gaining tactics for evil, for wrong, for bad things. Example of a good use might be, it's not that I can't think of one, it's that I'm thinking of too many of them. Oh, here's a great example, the AIDS crisis. In the 80s and in the early 90s, right, when AIDS rose up and we had this sort of mystery disease and we didn't know for a minute where it was coming from at all, and then we didn't know for sure what its nature was, and for a long time we thought it was a thing that only gay men or IV drug users could get. And what happened was those communities, especially the gay male community, locked down and said, hey, look, you know, we've got to start using condoms. We've got to start practicing safe sex. And they created all these, you know, brilliant marketing campaigns for safe sex, and in so doing saved a lot of lives and saved a lot of heartache and saved, frankly, a lot of money in healthcare costs for treating people who were infected with HIV through unsafe sex, right? So that's a positive way that you can use these compliance gaining tactics to influence the world. I'm actually looking at my bookshelf up here and wondering if I don't have Cialdini's book within reach, but I don't think I do. I can't really stress how important it is to understand that everything you hear is intended to manipulate you, for better or for worse, whether the intent is positive or negative, whether somebody is thinking, I'm manipulating this person, or whether somebody's thinking, oh, I just really want them to do this, or to think this, or to act this way. Their intent isn't important in the context of understanding that it's all manipulation. It's all about changing your mind and making you think about things the way that I want you to think about them. Okay. I would like to think that what I'm doing here and now is a good example of a positive use of compliance gaining tactics, right? And you will recognize some of these tactics as you go through and start to research this stuff, right? What they call liking. That's where I establish that I am like you somehow. Hey, we're all the working man. We're all in this together. Listen to me. I feel what you feel. I feel your pain. Right? That's liking. That's a compliance gaining tactic. scarcity, right? Artificial scarcity. You better hurry and take advantage of this special offer. It's not going to be here long, or limited supplies, or whatever, right? These are all compliance gaining tactics that you have to understand. It's all part of being literate about the media you consume. And nobody can do that for you. Okay, nobody can do that for you. You cannot ask the government to think for you. Dear God, there is nothing more dangerous in the world than that. Fundamentally opposed to every single thing that this country, the United States, is supposed to be about. And even, you know, our founding fathers, even people like Jefferson were aware of this. And you know, you can find the quotes about, you know, how democracy requires a well-informed population to be effective. And you're looking at what happens when you don't have a well-informed population in a democracy. It doesn't stay a democracy very long. And so the key thing here is forget about not just fairness doctrine for the mechanical reasons that I've already given. Forget about the idea that the government is going to save you from having to think about this stuff and understand it on your own. They're not. They can't. You don't want to live in that world, okay? That's just all there is to it. You don't want to live in that world because now it's secrets and now it's twisting the truth and now it's manipulating and it's, you know, hiding information that may make, you know, a Donald Trump look bad or may make you question the validity of a military action, right? Can you imagine living in a world where we went through the Vietnam War but the media wasn't allowed to question it? That's what we're setting ourselves up for when we start saying, oh, I want the government to be able to tell me what I can see on Fox News. And honestly, and again, I want to be really careful here because it's not my intent to, you know, to insult anybody directly or to call anybody's personal intellect into question or anything like that. But these phrases like fairness doctrine, they tend to be things that come from people who really want to sound like they know what they are talking about, but they really don't. To somebody who's not familiar with fairness doctrine, you say fairness doctrine, well, doctorate, and that's a nice formal academic word. And that's a, you know, what they used to call a $5 word, right? So now you sound smart and now you sound authoritative because you're using these complex words. Again, compliance gaining tactic. And the reality is people are throwing this stuff around and they don't really understand what they're saying. They don't understand what it means, right? You see the same, again, I mentioned a little earlier, I see this quite a bit about, oh, well, the FCC should revoke Fox News' charter or MSNBC's or CNN's or whoever. They should revoke their charter. They don't have a charter. They don't need a charter. That's not required. The FCC does not offer licenses to cable television stations. I can start a TV station right now. The federal government cannot tell me what I can and can't do with it. I can start a TV station, a cable station, right now, and the only thing that's going to stop that from propagating is whether or not private cable systems decide to carry it. Okay? The federal government has nothing to do with it at all. Nothing at all. And you don't want them to. That's just all there is to it. And so I really felt like that was a major, major point that I wanted to get across to people. We've got to stop. I know we live in a world where it's overwhelming to have so much information coming at you all the time. And you can never trust what you're reading and you can never trust what you're looking at, especially now with the internet and social media and all these sock puppets and deep fakes and so on and so forth. You know, it's really, really hard, but it's not as hard as you might think, because if you pay attention, right now, these things tend to out themselves, okay, and they tend to make themselves fairly obvious. Earlier today, I joined several online groups to support Bernie Sanders. And as I'm reading through that, I'm kind of trying to poke around right now and pull a few up so I can find some good examples of sort of the things that I'm talking about here. There's a lot of fakes and a lot of bullshit that goes on in these groups. One of the big ones that I just, well, I was about to say I love and I don't. I absolutely loathe it. But it's a, from an academic perspective of watching how these things work, it's a really amazing thing. So here's a group here that I joined today, Bernie Sanders, blah, blah, blah. And all through this group, you can see the messaging that's being propagated, and you can see where people are kind of, you know, testing limits and probing for information and trying to take temperatures of crowds and to test phrasing and things like that. And so, here's a good one, right? Here's a post I'm looking at. How do Warren's policies differ from Sanders? I'm curious. Can you please be specific and avoid negative comments? There's about a half and half chance that the person who posted that is actually working for the Warren campaign. And they are trying to figure out how to regain some of the ground that Elizabeth Warren has lost. A couple of weeks ago at this time, there was an incident and a debate where she conducted herself in a manner that frankly I thought was disappointing. And she's lost a lot of ground since then. And so this is the sort of thing, if I was working for her political team and I was inclined enough to operate on this level, this is the kind of thing I would do. Go to the Bernie Sanders groups and ask them, what don't you like about Elizabeth Warren? Come on, fellow burners, what's wrong with Beth Warren? Why don't you like her? Let's have a nice conversation about that. Right? It's not a nice conversation, man. That's opposition research. Okay? And you see it, I mean, just there's so many comments that come up. I should have bookmarked some stuff before I did the show, and it's just been kind of a crazy day, so I didn't get a chance to do all the work that I wanted to do. But you could start to see these folks. The Bernie Bros thing is another great example of this, right? I personally don't believe such a thing ever existed, because the ideological cant of Bernie Sanders as a person and of the campaigns that he has conducted is directly contrary to the kind of behavior that is ascribed to Bernie Bros, right? They're supposedly misogynist and real aggressive and real, you know, insulting and rude and nasty. Well, who wants to make Bernie Sanders followers look unappealing? Bernie Sanders? No. Bernie Sanders' opponents want his opponents to look rude and unappealing. And so if I'm Donald Trump, let's say, let's fast forward a little bit, pretend that Bernie Sanders has won the nomination for the Democrats. It's Sanders versus Trump for president. If I'm working for Donald Trump, well, in my opinion, by definition, I have no conscience and I have no ethics. So that's not in the way. So now I'm going to go out and I'm going to pretend to be a Bernie supporter. And I'm going to use, gender slurs. I'm going to use racial slurs. I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to call people stupid. I'm going to call people, fascists when there's no reason to call them that. I'm going to be very aggressive. I'm going to be very personal. I'm going to hurt people's feelings. And I'm going to do it loudly so that other people who do not want to vote for Bernie Sanders can point at me and say, oh, look, his supporters are jerks. He must be too. That's a thing that's happening. Okay, that is a thing that's happening. I can't say to what extent all of the rudeness that comes out ostensibly in favor of Sanders is legitimately ascribed to that kind of stuff, or whether, you know, he's got bound to have some people support him that are jerks. But that's the kind of thing you get. There's a narrative happening right now with Pete Buttigieg, and his dad apparently was a pretty hardline communist type. And so now you're starting to see these articles and these think pieces about, oh, Pete's dad is bad, blah, 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 and this is the background he came from. Again, it has nothing to do with him per se, but it's a way to poison the well. It's a way to make people think negatively about him. It's a way to play with people's emotions, and you use words and phrases with heavy emotional valence so that you're short-circuiting the intellect, right? You saw this a lot with the Occupy movement. You see it in political rallies in general. When you get a big crowd of people to start cheering and chanting, especially chanting in unison, right? Hey, hey, ho, ho. Your brain disconnects, right? They're not thinking critically anymore. They're just thinking about being part of that mass. And I'm sure any of us, at least if we're honest with ourselves, any of us can think of a point where a crowd just got out of hand. Somebody started acting stupid and it spread, and all of a sudden everybody was stupid. You know, people that you know. I mean, God, I'm trying to remember this story now. Under the Dome by Stephen King. And he's dealt with it in some other things too. And I'm talking about the series. I'm talking about the book, right? Where it can be so easy to point somebody at some of the Salem witch trials. The same thing, right? You get people scared and you make them afraid, and then you pick a scapegoat and you go after them. And in the meantime, what happens is we've got the ownership class standing on our necks. These people, you know, the 500 or 1,000 people in the world who really control everything because they've got nearly all the money and nearly all of the political power that goes with nearly all of the money. Right. And so they can afford to send out these messages through mass communication. They can afford to pay some idiot in, you know, South Korea or in, you know, wherever, Russia or whatever, to sit at a computer all day and pretend to be somebody. And you could start to see key phrases and techniques. You'll recognize them without even knowing you're doing it, right? One of my favorite ones is, and we saw this a lot in 16, well, I've been a lifelong Democrat, but if they nominate Bernie Sanders, I'm going to vote for the Republican. I promise you, nobody who is a lifelong Democrat ever wrote a sentence like that. That's liking. Remember? We talked about that a minute ago. I'm a lifelong Democrat. Hey, I'm a lifelong Democrat, too. And boy, if they nominate Bernie Sanders, if that lifelong Democrat thinks that, and I don't really like Bernie either, so maybe it's okay for me to say I'm not going to. It's compliance gaining. It's manipulation. Right? And they pull us along, and they pull us along, and we all want to think that we're not susceptible to it, and we all are, including me, okay? I'm not invulnerable to this. I'm a little better armed than the average person because I spent 4 years in college studying it, and I spent 35 years as an activist watching it, and I've been online for 30 years seeing how people do these things in conversations. It happens to me. I don't want to fall back into my personal stuff or semi-personal stuff, but I've had some trolls that have been following me around for this, in some cases, 20 years now, right? And they'll follow you around, and they call my employers and harass my employers. They call my family and harass my family. They call an employer, get me fired, and then when I post, they say, well, why won't you work for a living? You refuse to work for a living. You're lazy. Or you can't hold a job. Because there's no way I'm going to convince the 4,000 people on my page, all of them, or really even a significant percentage of them, anybody who hasn't had that experience is going to find it hard to believe because it's so warped and so bizarre. A normal, sane human being has a hard time crediting that behavior, right? Like, no, people don't do that. Well, people do that. It's been done to me. Oh, well, you don't want to work for their... Here's one that I actually ended up kind of, I won't say falling for, but it tripped me up and I got caught up in it, right? I have been producing online content for a long time, and many, many producers of online content, raise funds, or they do, Patreon or GoFundMe or whatever. They have a tip jar on their website or what have you. Millions of people do that, right? But this small group that's arrayed itself against me, if I do that, I'm begging for money. because I'm too lazy to work. And Joe User, who's just going by and maybe, you know, liked my page because I posted something funny that he liked, he sees this and he sees this guy showing up and talking all this nonsense. It's, oh, well, maybe this guy really is a jerk. Maybe he really is a grifter. Maybe he really is trying to get over. And I ended up where my mistake was I started trying to defend myself against that, and I shouldn't have, right? Because I've never been in this to make money. That's just never why I did this. I need to make money. I like to make money. I would love to be sitting in a nice fancy studio with a high quality camera and a green screen behind me and a glass top table in front of me with a, you know, a nice little vintage RCA radio mic on the desk and a little couch where I can have formal guests and an agent to book me and funds to advertise and all that. I'd love to have that stuff, but that's not why I'm in the game, and it never was, right? Frankly, if that's why I was doing this, I would be doing very, very different things, because this doesn't pay. Telling people the truth is not a thing that pays, because the truth is often very uncomfortable and doesn't always play well to the ego, right? Especially when you're trying to tell people they've been hoodwinked. Nobody wants to hear they got fooled. And I said it one time a few years ago in a way that a lot of people really liked, and I've heard it back several times since then. Some people will pay $10 for the sideshow to prove they didn't get taken in by the $5 circus, right? People will go out of their ways, and they'll double down, and they'll triple down, and they'll stick to their guns, and by God, and they'll become very emotional and very angry, and somebody says, hey there, and because it, you know, it hurts your feelings, and it hurts your ego, and so people don't want to hear that sort of thing. So I'm just comment. Come on here, politicians beg for money, churches beg for money, Girl Scouts beg for money. Right? Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. You know, I mean, we all beg for money in some sense, right? I mean, I'm begging for money if I go to work at Walmart for $12 an hour. Right? I mean, that would be a huge compromise of my principles because I don't want to do anything that generates income for Walmart. I think that company is evil and sick, and I want them to die and go away. And they have done huge damage to this country. But ironically enough, I live across the street from one, and I don't have any wheels. And it's getting to the point where I may end up having to go over there and work for them just so that I can say, I'm not expecting you guys to support me. Right? Just so that I've got a leg to stand on. And that's what I was talking about in terms of getting caught up into that, right? I screwed that up by buying into that and decided I was going to prove that that's not who I was. Well, now, okay, I'll go out and get a job. Well, I go out and get a job. And when this started, I was going to school full time, right? I go out and get a job. Well, now I'm working 25, 30 hours a week or 40 hours a week. I'm exhausted. My grades start dropping. I'm stressing out more. I don't have the time to produce content. I don't have the time to defend myself 24/7 against the waves and waves and waves of trolls that are coming in and trying to, you know, run me down or trying to hurt my reputation. And so it becomes a trap. And the reason I'm talking about this isn't because I want you to feel sorry for me or anything else or you know, any of that stuff, but to illustrate that none of us are immune to these kinds of manipulations. Gaslighting is a phrase that has come into very popular parlance over the last few years, right? Where you basically convince somebody that the truth that is the objective truth that they know is not the truth, and they're insane for believing it. Been very candid in the past about, you know, I have PTSD, I have bipolar 2, I have major depressive disorder, self-esteem issues, all that stuff. So that's a sensitivity that I have. That's a button that can be effectively pushed, right? You jerk, you're not doing enough. And, you know, I was raised by a Calvinist Marine who was into that heavy Calvinist work ethic thing. And man, if you're not filthy and sweating broken bones when you get home from work, you're not working, boy. And they play on that. And my fear that that my audience would buy into that caused me to react to it in such a way that it really cut the legs out from underneath the work that I was doing. And I ended up eating dirt for it. And I ended up not producing work for a long time. And then I go get a job and kind of forget about all of it. 5 years go by. Now all of a sudden, look up, we got President Trump. I feel kind of shitty about that because I really wish that I had been in play more than I was in the last electoral cycle. Not that I think I could have stopped the man by himself, but I certainly could have done more than I did. But instead, I was busy chasing the paycheck, fulfilling the social obligations, because that was what was put on me. That was the corner that I was painted into by these people using these techniques and these tactics against me, which is what the conversation is really about, in a million different ways and for a million different reasons. It's absolutely critical, especially if you are a supporter of Senator Sanders' candidacy. You've got to be aware of this. You've got to be able to spot it and understand it. And I think a lot of us do, but we don't have the formal kind of training. We don't have the language even internally to kind of sort out what we're seeing and put labels on it and put words to it so that we can talk about it and call it out for what it is. And you see some really, really great examples of this kind of behavior in the mainstream media with regard to Sanders, right? This I saw a graphic the other day. I can't remember who it was from, a CNN or MSNBC or something like that, right after the New Hampshire primary the other night. And I don't even remember who was second and third, but they show the second place candidate and they show the third place candidate. Oh, well, blah, blah, blah. This guy came in second. This guy came in third. Yay. They never mentioned who came in first. Because they don't want people to support Bernie Sanders, because supporting Bernie Sanders runs contrary to the corporate interests of the owners who control that station, that media. Yeah, and see, this is I've got a commenter here. It's got me. I have to authorize the comment because there's a F word in it. But, you know, it's this commenter says, you know, DNC's already fucking things up. And he's right. And I'm terribly sorry. I know that it hurts feelings. I know there are so many people out there who so desperately wanted to vote for a female president, for a woman for president. I want to vote for a woman for president in my lifetime. Okay. Just that woman isn't Hillary Clinton. Because I disagree with her policies. I disagree with her approach. I don't think she's progressive. I think she is a very, what they're now the common label is neoliberal, right? And what it is, a very center right moderate that portrays itself as left because the political spectrum in this country is almost entirely right wing at this point, right? We don't have a serious left in this country, or we haven't had. I think there's one rising, and I think you're seeing that with the Sanders campaign. But yeah, it's exactly the that kind of manipulation, right? Oh, Sanders can't win. I see that. Yeah, I'm looking, literally, I'm reading through Facebook in one window. I'm watching a Sanders rally in another window. 7,500 people, right, in an arena chanting for Bernie Sanders, and I got somebody else in another window saying, well, Sanders doesn't have the popular support. What the fuck are you talking about? Guy's got arenas full of people chanting his name, and the same thing happened in 2016. Oh, he can't get elected. He doesn't have the popular support, but he always had the hugest crowds of support. He always had the big energy behind him, you know, and if the DNC had played it right, they could have got behind Sanders and they could have really re-energized that party. They really could have brought young people and new faces and new blood into that party. And the Democratic Party would have owned the United States government for the next 5 or 6 cycles, at least, until the kids that are young now got old like I am and started burning out, you know? Yeah, it's. I definitely don't want to relitigate the 2016 election here, but no, I totally agree. You know, Hillary Clinton, for whatever merit she may have, was not my candidate. She's not a progressive, right? And even, you know, President Obama, who I voted for twice, who I'm happy I voted for twice, who I thought did a very good job as president, but even so, it was very late in his presidency before he even got on board with gay marriage. His position evolved to that, which is fine. But when that's coming from a sitting president, I'll accept it. When it's coming from a political candidate, it's cynical bullshit, right? When I've got a candidate, somebody who's running for office or trying to run for an office that says, oh, well, my position evolved. To me, that reads every single time the polls told me people didn't like the position I used to have. Right. I do remember that bird. And I thought that was funny and I thought it was awesome. I'm not a mystic and I'm not a religious person in any sense of the word. But I did think that was an interesting thing and a neat little symbolic event. And if we could just get the birds back on board, we'd be all right, I guess. But, and you know, here's the thing, right? And this is one of the reasons why I like Sanders, by the way. If that had happened to another candidate, I promise you, by the end of the week, their marketing team would have found a way to turn that into an overt appeal to heavily religious people, deeply spiritual people, the New Age people, the people who are into healing crystals and astrology and all of that stuff, people who believe in that bigger world and who believe that nothing happens by chance and everything's a sign from God or a sign from the universe. They could have played that to the hilt. And the fact that his campaign didn't do that reflects one of the biggest reasons that I really love Sanders and the way he works. He's certainly the most candidate that's most aligned with my values and my approach to things. He doesn't bullshit. And I like that a lot. So, yeah, this is, you know, again, it's socialism. There's another word, right? I mean, God, and it's so stupid. Oh, how many times do I have to hear the Nazis were socialists before I just punch somebody in the face? The Nazis were not socialists. The Nazis were fascists. Okay? They used the socialism label to sell their fascism to the very small group of people that is non-Jewish Germans for whom they intended to make the benefit of the Third Reich. Okay? They were never socialists, just like North Korea is not a Democratic People's Republic and the Chicago Bears are not a football team. Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe the Bears are a football team, but North Korea is not a Democratic People's Republic. Okay? And I've got this commenter here, and all I see is first name, last name, so I apologize for just referring to you as this commenter, but you're literally cutting up his first name, last name. We're getting towards the top of the hour, and I'm going to wrap up here real quick. But I want to kind of tie all this up with going on this socialism thing, okay? Because the reality is the existence of a state government is a socialist function, right? Certainly, public roads, libraries, public schools, the public justice system, police, all of these things, the FCC, right? The fact that we all run our household electricity on 110 volts, all of these things, the fact that you have a safe car, these are all socialist things. Right? The problem is that we have been bell-trained to hate socialism. Oh, socialism. Thank you very much, man. I really do appreciate the support. And, you know, for all of the monetary material things that we have to worry about in the world, for me, what makes the difference is knowing that people actually care. People are watching and people are getting something out of what I say. So thank you very much, man. That comment really means a lot to me. When somebody comes at you and says, you know, here's my thing, okay? Say, why do you support universal health care? Why do you support universal education? That's socialism. The answer is because I don't want to live in a nation of sick idiots. It is in every single person's best interest in this country that every single person in this country have every possible opportunity to be educated, to be healthy, to have a home, to have stability, right? The only people whose interest that isn't in are the owners. And this is a thing that I'm going to hit on, a theme that I'm going to hit on repeatedly over and over again as long as I am doing these shows. And God bless George Carlin, and which is funny coming from an atheist, but to an atheist, no less. God bless George Carlin for articulating it so well. It is not in the best interest of the ownership class in this country or any other to have an educated, healthy, engaged population. They do not want that. They do not want you to know better. They don't even want you to think about that, right? What is good for them is mindless button pushing, form filling, obedience. Show up, be dedicated to generating that profit for that owner. Shut up. Here's $15 an hour so you can go out and buy a bag of weed once in a while, or maybe a little boat for your family or a swimming pool. Shut up. Compete with your neighbors for material wealth. You've got to have a shiny truck. You've got to have a shinier truck than Bill down the street. Focus on that. Focus on competing with each other over tiny little things, and the owner are taking us all for a ride while we're fighting with each other over nothing. And that's how this happens. All this stuff that I've talked about this hour, that's what empowers that. That's how they get away with it, right? They can come right out and lie. It's just a beautiful, beautiful example. It just crossed my mind, right? Donald Trump has been going on and on and on and on. Oh, the economy's going so great. Greatest stock market ever. Oh, we're recovering so well. We're creating all these jobs, blah, blah, blah. A couple of days ago, Donald Trump cut the cost of living raise for federal employees to 1%, claiming that economic conditions were too tough to give them their normal cost of living adjustment. Literally, on the same day, he's going out and saying, oh, we're doing great. The economy's never been better, but we can't afford to pay our federal employees a living wage. That's doublethink. And I'm afraid his followers believe that shit. And you know, I don't want to get into the sweeping generalizations about Trump voters, but at this point, you've got to be a pretty low information individual, or you've got to believe you have a vested interest financially, materially, in this guy's success to continue supporting him, because he's literally going out and issuing forth contradictory statements on a daily basis, and people just don't even notice. You know, and I'm afraid he might be right. He may very well be able to stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and get away with it, at least in the sense that his supporters won't abandon him for it, because they're so bent. So many of these people, and this is the one thing that he really, really nailed and did right. He got the idea, and he got it straight, that especially rural, white, uneducated, deeply religious people, particularly in like the Deep South and in the Midwest, feel like the government has abandoned them. They feel like they're ignored and disparaged by the liberal elites on the coasts. They feel like they have been, disrespected. They feel like right? I'm sure I am part of that group from their perspective. They feel like we think they're all stupid hicks and don't have any blah, blah, blah. And he plays on that. And boy, did he do a good job of it. And the hilarious-ish thing, terrifying-ish thing about that is the reason it works is because he thinks they're dumber than I think they are. He thinks his voters are way stupider than I think they are. I think they're just misled and desperate for some sort of sense of purpose and belonging. He thinks they're idiots. Listen to the way he talks. Listen to the things he says to them and the things he expects them to believe. He thinks these people are morons. I don't want to say he's right, but it's working. And it has worked for a long time, right? I mean, this is the same people. You know, rural Kentucky, everybody votes against socialism and Medicaid. Oh, well, not going to help those welfare queens. But that's where most of the welfare in Kentucky goes. It's to those very same people that vote against it. You know, these people vote against the Affordable Care Act and Medicare for All. And then they complain because they don't have health insurance. You know, and this is, yeah, I'll hit that real quick on the way out the door. I do want to wrap this up. We're coming up a little bit over the hour now, or over my hour, and I don't like to go over that because an hour of me is hard enough to listen to. But it really is, I believe, the fundamental duty of every citizen, and certainly every American citizen, to make the effort to understand, to become media literate, to become politically literate, to know what social means and how is it different from communism and how is it different from fascism and how do those things enable or stand against totalitarianism, on and on and on. You don't have to be a political scientist. It certainly helps, but you don't have to be. We don't all have time for that, and that's fine. But you have to get the basics right. That's your duty as a citizen. Okay, that is absolutely fundamental to the ongoing existence of this country. And if we keep slacking that part of it, if we keep turning our backs on that part of it, we're gonna lose it. You have to get involved at the very least, at the very, very least. If you're not interested, stay out of it. Just stay out of it. Don't participate in the conversations. Don't vote. Right? If you don't care about politics, just shut up and go away. Go do something else. It's fine. You know, it's really not fine for me because I think it's every citizen's duty to be informed to a certain degree and to go exercise their right to franchise that people have fought and died for. But if for you, you just can't bring yourself to give a damn about what Donald Trump or George Bush or Bernie Sanders has to say, okay, that's fine. That's your choice. It's a free country. And I'm not going to disparage your choice, even if it's not the choice that I make. But then you have to also take that introspective stance, that introspective responsibility to look at yourself and say, hey, you know what? I don't care, so I'm not going to participate. This is one of my big issues with the vote blue no matter who crowd. First of all, I think that mentality is a little bit broken, right? Because David Duke was a Democrat. Right. I mean, he ran on the Democratic ticket. So does vote blue no matter who mean I got to go vote for David Duke, the Klansman, the Grand Dragon or the Ku Klux Klan who ran as a Democrat? He's blue. Should I go vote for him? Compliance gating tactics, manipulation. And this is what the big parties and the big power rely on. I need to find this quote real quick because I pulled it up or I referenced it in a video a couple nights ago. And I want to find out, here's the quote from Hermann Goering. This was actually from the Nuremberg Diaries. It's often said that he was at the Nuremberg trials, and it wasn't. It was in an interview at the jail cell, right? Of course, the people don't want war. But after all, it's the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it's always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it's a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship, voice or no voice. The people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That's easy. All you have to do is tell them they're being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to greater danger. That's what I'm talking about. And we see it here, we see it now, we see it today. And we see our peers and our fellow citizens buying into that thinking, right? And there are people out there who I respect and even admire who continue to blow this horn of, oh, well, you know, we got to stop putting Bernie Sanders over. We've got to stop, we got to stop campaigning or, criticizing other candidates because that means you're disloyal. You're splitting the party. You're going to put the vote at risk. Horseshit. That's not how this works. The only way that works is if you buy into it. Just like the only reason the ownership class gets away with exploiting us the way they do right now is because we've become acclimated over decades to not standing up and saying no more. I could make a strong argument that this country should have been in a situation in general strike 15 or 20 years ago. We should have been in the streets refusing to work, Now you have no waitresses, you have no truck drivers, you have no taxi drivers, you have no janitors, you have no garbage men, you have no doctors, no nurses, no lawyers, no teachers. Everybody stays home until this bullshit stops. And if we all got to take a hit for a couple of weeks and be a little broke for a while, well, that's going to suck. But you know what sucks more? Handing our entire legacy, our future, our children's future, unto the nth generation over to a feudal state where the ownership class, that 500 to 1,000 people who control everything and have all the money, get to live with their foot permanently on our necks, and we're not even allowed to stand up and complain about it anymore, and eventually we won't even have the education to know we should. And that's already happening too. I talked about that some last night. We'll hit again on that later. I've gone long enough. I'm at an hour 8, my counter says. I want to thank everybody who stopped in. It looks like I've had a small handful of viewers the whole time, and whoever first name, last name turns out to thing. Turns out to be, I sure do appreciate you coming in, and I appreciate your comments. Sorry that I didn't get to engage with all of that directly, but I definitely do appreciate you coming in, and I hope as I continue to do this on a more regular basis, more of us will come in. Anybody, you've got my, let me see if I can figure out how my hands work here. Is this one? Yeah, so right about, nope, there. So you've got my Facebook, you've got my website, you've got the big page that I'm an administrator on. It's I Loved to Wake Up When Barack Obama Was President. All right, I love to wake up in the morning when Barack Obama was president. I administrate that page. It's got like 200,000 people. There's my PayPal address if you want to throw me a couple of bucks so I can buy a coffee, or if you want to throw me a few thousand bucks so I can build a studio. Either way, I'll be happy to take it. You know the social media drill. Don't forget, like, share, comment, follow, spread the word. Do everything you can. I'm going to keep doing this. Ironically, even though I do have most of a degree in media production, and I actually enjoy doing the work, I don't feel like doing all the bells and whistles and fancy, After Effects titles and dun, 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 broadcast news and all that other crap. I feel like that's, you're starting to get into putting style over substance there. I'm worried about building a substance first situation and getting people built up and used to the idea that I know what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm not going to pull any punches. I'm not on anybody's payroll, no matter. I don't, right? If you show up, if you send me $5,000, I'm going to be grateful for the rest of my life. But if you send me $5,000 with a note that says, hey, I want you to put over Donald Trump, you're going to lose $5,000 and be pissed. Okay, I don't sell out. If I was going to sell out, I wouldn't be living in my brother and sister-in-law's basement doing this on a webcam with no car, right? And I don't even own a decent pair of shoes anymore, okay? I didn't do that, and I didn't get into that situation because I'm out there selling out and doing all the things that I can think of to grift people and bring money out. And I'm very much aware that a lot of people don't like Facebook. I don't like Facebook. Unfortunately, it's the platform that gives me the greatest reach. Randy Brush, thank you, man. You've been around for a long time, and you've been always really supportive, and you've always been really engaged, and I really do appreciate that. And I hope that here, as I am getting more active, we will see all of this build up, and we'll see your efforts as well as mine pay off more in the broader sense of having a more involved and educated and engaged population. And maybe if we're really, really lucky, we can put the brakes on this handcart before it finishes its trip to hell. So I'm going to get out of here, everybody. Thank you very much once more for stopping in. You've got all the information that you need to find me. I'm going to try to do this on a regular basis going forward. I'm thinking probably I'll do it Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, either on Facebook or on YouTube. If I'm over there, I'll record it and post it here. If I'm over here, obviously, I'll link it back over there, and eventually we'll all get together on the same page. And hopefully, I'll say enough things that enough people like that we can start making this a party every night. So always, if you've got anything to say, if you've got ideas, if you've got a topic that you want me to talk about, anything like that, there's a million ways to get a hold of me. My website, johnhenry.us, has always got links to my stuff, and you can reach me through there. And I don't think I've got a contact form up yet. I just rebuilt the whole thing, but there will be one soon enough, and we can take care of it from there. So thanks again. again, first name, last name, whatever your actual name is. Props to you, man. I really appreciate you being so engaged tonight. Randy, thank you for coming in. The other folks who have been in and out, I've been glancing at the counter up there. I've seen people come and go. Thanks, everybody, for stopping in. And we will see you again Monday night at 8 o'clock.